Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
All right, we're going to try to get some inspiration into your lives this afternoon. A great story that actually just came kind of in front of me, and I'm calling an audible here this afternoon because there is a young man by the name of Charlie Jabali. And if you go to his Twitter page right now, it says on there, Charlie Jabali, mission, transform 1 million lives, was 304 pounds, chapter one, music industry, chapter two, athlete. And the way that he's transformed himself into an athlete and I guess maybe a motivational speaker is very interesting. Charlie, but they also call you Rocket, is that what I understand?
Charlie Rocket.
Charlie Rocket, I like that. How are you?
I'm amazing, man. It's good to be here in St. Louis.
That is not to be confused with Little Rocket Man, right? It's not like Charlie Little Rocket Man. There's no North Korea references.
No,
so what, have you ever been to St. Louis, by the way?
I have. Been here on tour with my artists a few times.
Yeah, so let's talk about that part of your life. You were in the music industry. First of all, how old are you?
I'm 29.
All right, you're a young guy. You were working in the music industry doing what? You were managing a hip-hop artist that was pretty popular.
Yes, managing big hip-hop artists and you know, it was amazing. Got to travel the world and do amazing things.
How did you get into that originally?
Well, I'm from Atlanta, and growing up, like Atlanta is big culturally for hip-hop. So my friends started making music when I was in high school. I put a studio in my bedroom, and after school there would be 20 kids in my room writing, and we'd put all 20 of them on a song, and it would be like a 15-minute song.
Yeah, you know? Right.
And from there it just grew, and I became a cameraman for a big artist by the name of Soulja Boy, and dropped out of college and traveled the world, and then I got fired. And then I told my mom, I was like, Ma, like the cameraman thing isn't where the money is. Like, I'm going to be a manager.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, what do you know about managing hip-hop artists? I said, nothing yet, but I'm going to figure it out because that's where the money is.
And you know what? That's what most people start doing, by the way. They have no idea what they're doing, and then they learn it, right? If you have a passion for something, you can learn and figure it out.
That's right.
I like that. I like that, you know, passion and ambition. So you when you were doing this,
yes.
And I've seen, we're going to walk people through some of the videos and the stuff that's online right now because some of it's really interesting, but you weighed 304 pounds at
yes.
your highest. You got me beat because I was 208.
Yeah.
I weigh 165 right now. You weigh what
you
now?
Good.
Thank you very much.
I weigh 185 and have about 30 more pounds to lose.
I don't think you need to lose anything more. I think you're looking good. But here's what the video. So you made this video for Nike. You were trying to pitch your story to Nike, and I want to make sure that we're fill in the blanks. So you're this
yes.
hip-hop manager. You're
yes.
out there working in the music industry. You're touring across the world. But then you change gears completely, don't you?
Yes. So when I was 8 years old, it was my dream to be an athlete. And like when you're eight, it's like your truest dream before society tells you, you know, what's right for you or what. It's just your truest dream.
I used to sit in my backyard when I was that age or in my driveway and I would shoot baskets. I was terrible at basketball. Love it though. But I would always run, you know, this was by myself in my driveway. I'd run these scenarios through my mind that I was in the Final Four and
yes.
shooting the winning basket and
yes.
stuff like that. Yeah, it's great.
It is. And that was my dream. I love basketball. But as I got older, since I was a chubby kid, I was overweight. I wasn't good at athletics.
Mm-hmm.
So I needed something to
Me too, by the way.
So I wanted something to be good at. So I chose business and I created this life for myself. I was CEO Charlie. Like, and I embodied that, and I wore a suit to school, and, like, I had my briefcase, like, I was a...
Really?
Oh, yeah.
It was like an image thing.
Oh, like, I embodied what I wanted to be.
Now, where
life.
Did you get that from? You didn't just decide that on your own. Were you inspired by someone who had done that, or did you read it in a book, or where did that come from?
I was fascinated by money. When I was 8 years old, I would walk in my grandfather's house with my dad, and they would be yelling at each other, like arguing at the top of their lungs. And I said, "What are y'all yelling about?" And they were debating stocks. And I said, "I want to yell with y'all. Like, I want in on this."
I like that. Good idea. Right.
And so we did a stock competition. And we all picked a stock. I had a little money saved up, like $500 from cutting grass. And my grandfather bought a company called Sara Lee. My dad bought Reebok, and I bought Nike. Like, Nike to me was like the coolest company in the world. And my dad and grandfather were so scared for me because the stock had been going down and it just wasn't doing
good. And what year? Let's
put, this is like 96.
Okay, mid 90s.
And I was like, this is where Michael Jordan is. And they just came out with the Nike Presto. I was like, this is
hot. And you only, you ate at that time? Okay, yes. Wow. Man.
All I knew is what I liked.
I was watching the Flintstones, trying to figure out how they move those cars with their feet. That's what I was doing when I was 8 years old.
I was doing that too. But I loved Nike. And as time went on, so that was my fascination in business. Buried my dream to be an athlete. As I got older, business did good. The bigger my business got, the bigger essentially I got. I was over 300 pounds, and I had everything you could ever imagine in life, the successful businesses, you know.
And it wasn't just, and I want to kind of fill in the blanks on this too, because you managed the hip-hop artist. What was the name?
2 Chainz.
2 Chainz. Pretty big artist, right?
Yeah.
But you were also doing sort of entrepreneurial things on the side. You made a fair amount of money, right?
Yes, yes, very much so.
How much money are we talking?
I mean,
we're talking millions?
Our company, I was running a $15 million a year business that... I walked away from, you know, just...
And what was that $15 million a year business focused on? Was that everything? Was it the music and everything
music,
else you were doing
merchandise,
too?
Merchandise. Like, we did... I came up with a campaign a couple Christmases ago for these ugly Christmas sweaters, and I made this design called Dabbing Santa. Like, you see the NFL...
The dabbing was real popular a couple years ago, right?
That's right.
And so you did Dabbing Santa, and what'd you do? Put it on a T-shirt?
Put it on a Christmas sweater, and did $2 million in 30 days.
Just from that?
Yeah.
See, this...
Cam Newton
pisses me off, Charlie, because that's what I'm trying to do. Every time I'm trying to think of these ideas, and every one of these ideas has been thought of. You thought of something that people hadn't thought of, right? Or it just, you kind of created a little bit niche. And I think even Steve Jobs and some of the real successful people would say, you got to really kind of put something in front of somebody that they don't know that they want, and then make them want it. That's what marketing is.
Yes. 100%.
All right, so hold your thoughts, because okay, the rest of this story is really interesting, too. We're going to get to the point where Charlie basically sheds a couple hundred pounds and is now training for an Ironman and puts his story in front of Nike.
Yes.
Like, you went to the folks at Nike, and they sort of like this story, don't they?
It's been an amazing story.
All right, the story's going to continue. We're back with more in a moment on KMOX.
Local news from St. Louis's news, traffic, and weather station, KMOX.
All right, a fascinating guest in the studio with me this afternoon, Charlie Jabali, who is, veteran of the music industry, we'll say, at 29 years old, used to weigh 304 pounds, decided to change his life dramatically, and he put a video together in hopes that Nike would see it. And I want you to explain this. I'm going to play a little audio from the video, Charlie. What made you do this? You lose all the weight, you decide, and we didn't really cover this, and I'm on limited time, so I don't want to skip over parts of the story, but after all the success that you had, your companies, the Christmas sweater that you did that made a couple million dollars, you walk away from all that?
I walked away from everything.
Why?
Well, I was always CEO Charlie, and I had, you know, all this money and success, and when I got sick and diagnosed with a brain tumor and felt like I was about to die, none of that meant anything to me. So I wanted to reinvent my entire life, and I created a new character for myself that I was going to become and live every day. So I created a superhero for myself, and I named him Charlie Rocket. And that was going to be the guy who saves my life, where CEO Charlie was this business guy who became successful, but I was going to die doing that. So I wanted to become somebody completely new. So I wanted to be an athlete. So I called myself Charlie Rocket, and I left my business And I embodied being an athlete every single day.
And you started working out, right?
Trying
to drop, again, you're at 300 plus pounds.
Yes.
Like, I'm going to drop the weight. Did you have specific goals in mind at that point?
Yes, I wanted to do an Ironman. I wanted to pick the biggest, boldest thing. And this is just the past 10 months. So when did you
start losing weight?
It's been a lifelong journey of ups and downs and ups and downs, but I've lost 90 pounds in the past 10 months.
Okay, but that was when, 10 months ago is when you committed to doing this Ironman.
Yes.
And say, okay, I'm going to take my life on a different track. So you, in the videos that I saw on Instagram, was that you in every video? Were there people playing you?
No, that was
because
me.
I bring it up because if you watch the video and it's at Charlie mm-hmm. on Instagram, and we'll
yes.
explain, that's a very unique handle and there's a reason for that. But you see Charlie working out and running and then the transformation as he sheds the weight. And here's what the video, a little audio of what it sounds like on Instagram.
Okay. I pretty much had everything you can imagine in life. $1 million businesses, world tours, #1 albums. We even won a Grammy. I left it all. When I was 8, I had this dream. You see, I wanted to be an athlete, but I was a chubby kid. It didn't matter to society what I was passionate about. It only mattered what I could realistically accomplish. I had everything anyone could ever dream of. But the bigger my business got, the more I buried my dream.
All right, so that tells some of the backstory that we have gone over here in the past 15 minutes. You work on this goal. You train. You lose a bunch of weight. You put a video together. You want to put it in front of Nike, right?
Yes.
What was that about?
So I believe in the law of attraction. And, like, I asked myself, if I want to be a Nike athlete and what do Nike athletes have? And Nike athletes have commercials. And I said, I'm going to dress up and I'm going to be a Nike athlete and I'm going to make my own Nike commercial. And Nike has a mission statement that really inspires me. And they said that if you have a body, then you're an athlete. And that's like human potential. And I felt like that resonated with me. And I wanted to make a story that inspires people. And I said on the video, I hope Nike sees this. And I put it out and it got 1 million views in 2 weeks on Facebook. And I got an email from Nike that said, you have our entire campus in a frenzy. Nike, a couple of days later, tweeted out to 7 million people my video. And then they said, we want to fly you to Portland and meet with our entire staff. And this is a couple days ago.
Yeah, so the tweet says, if you have a body, this is February 7th, Nike, at Nike, if you have a body, you're an athlete. Incredible story, at Charlie Jabali, but it's not over yet. And the part that's not over yet is they invite you to come to the campus,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. So I come to campus and they gave me this huge presentation in their boardroom.
When was this? Late last week?
This was Friday.
Okay.
This was Friday in Portland. So I walk into this big boardroom and they had all the executives and employees and they had a big TV on the wall with me on it. And they gave a presentation to me, about how I inspired them as a company and why they go to work every day. And they said, sometimes we forget with our deadlines and our deliverables and meetings why we come to work. And when they said they saw my video, it reminded them and inspired them. And they gave me this huge box that was like porcelain engraved. It was like a huge, gigantic shoebox. And it was engraved in rockets. It was a Nike box, engraved in rockets.
Charlie Rocket.
And they gave me all these exclusive shoes, and they put me with their master trainers.
By the way, let me stop you. What size are you?
10.
Oh, so am I. So am I. So
just I got you.
Just keep that in mind, all right?
I
had to toss that in there. It's all about me, Charlie. Just remember that, okay?
It is all
anyway,
about
go
you.
Ahead.
So, It was just a dream come true, training with the master trainers that gave me the most amazing product, and they care about me, and Nike is like the most human company I could ever imagine. Like, they cared about me, and I never would have expected that from such a big company, and they listened, and they reacted, and I just love it.
It's pretty cool. So right now, I got to try to cram all this information in because there's so much going on.
Yes.
And we called an audible with you here this afternoon because I found out you were in town. So we got you in here. But you're training for an Ironman. So yes. That's your goal right now. Which Ironman are you training for?
So, all right. So this year is really big and exciting. Okay. In 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, I'm training for the New Zealand Ironman. And when I get back from that, in April, I start biking across the country. So I'm going to bike with my best friend all the way across the country, and I'm going to find all the other second chance stories like mine, and I'm going to document it, and we're going to do motivational rallies in all the cities along the way. I'll stop through St. Louis.
You got to come here because, you know, I'm a cyclist. I'll do a long stretch with you and ride.
I can't wait.
Now, are you going to be on a road bike or a mountain bike?
Road bike.
Okay, I can do both, but all right. we'll ride for sure. My friend Phil Kogan, who's the host of The Amazing Race, did this several years ago to raise awareness for MS, and he started in California, went to New York. That's actually how I met him. I had interviewed him for years, and I rode with him for 60 miles up in Chicago. We became cycling friends and friends outside of The Amazing Race from that, but I'd love to ride with you if you come through.
Yeah, man.
On the Ironman situation, you're out of your mind, first of all, because what you have to do to complete an Ironman, and I've done, I don't know how many centuries on my bike, and it's hard, and I get to mile 80, 85, I'm like, why am I doing this? But the Ironman thing seems just so impossible to me, because maybe, and you would be a good person to speak to about this, it's not only physical. The physical part is a large portion. Maybe I can pull off the physical part, but the mental part is just what I have this incredible fear of.
I have a trick
for
you.
All right, tell me the trick. So you know what my trick is? Don't do an Ironman. All right, so that one, that's a pretty simple trick, but what's yours?
Okay, so when I did my research on an Ironman, I looked up how many hours a week the average Ironman trains, and I saw that it was between 8 and 14 hours a week. And I was like, that's a couple hours a day. And then I thought back to when I was 8, and I was like, biking around the neighborhood for a couple hours on the weekend wasn't hard. Swimming at the pool for a couple hours wasn't hard, and running around the park for a couple hours wasn't hard. So my Ironman training, I'm just going to act like an 8-year-old kid and wake up and play for a couple hours every day. And
it's a good attitude if you can do it.
And the thing is, like, I've done a couple 112-mile bike rides. I've done marathons. Mm-hmm. And it's been easy because I literally say it's easy. And I just go out and play every day, and there are days where it's challenging, but then when I'm done, I'm like, oh, that was easy. Just like at one time, walking for us was hard, and then now we say, oh, that's easy, you know, or tying our shoe at one time was hard. So it's like, I just go into it saying it's going to be easy, and I go into it with that 8-year-old play mentality. I'm going to play for a couple hours every day.
So this story, outside of Nike inviting you to the campus, being on KMOX radio, you've attracted the attention of other media outlets. Is Ellen involved here as well?
Well, hopefully. So I just got pitched for Ellen, and Oprah's producers were talking to me, and Inc. Magazine is doing a piece on me, and CNN Headline News is doing a whole feature on me next month. So just all this crazy stuff.
But your hope overall with this, and you talked about the bike trip, is you want to find the people that are maybe inspired by what you're doing or doing things that are similar.
Yes. I believe the power of stories is what really helps transform people, because knowledge is for our brain. But we've never ever said, you know, follow your head. We always say follow your heart. And stories are what talks to our heart. And I feel that, you know, knowledge is super important. We got to have that. But I just want to help tell stories and find the other stories like mine. And that's why I'm dedicating my life to this. Like, and I want to just tell amazing stories and transform people's lives.
Yeah, it's crazy. So the handle on Twitter is at Charlie Jabbley, JABALEY, but on Instagram, they actually gave you your name as your as your handle.
So
in
Charlie.
Other words, if I were trying to go on right now and say at Mark, ain't gonna work. I'm Mark Talk on Instagram. You were Charlie Jabbley on Instagram, but they liked your story so much they reached out.
Yes. So some of the employees at Instagram just were so inspired by what I was doing with helping people, and they came to me and they said, we own the name Charlie, and nobody has it, and we want to give it to you. Like, and they gave it to me. And Instagram is where I post most all my content, and I'm always on there, like, giving people advice and responding to people. And I'm very open and honest. I talk about depression and I talk about, you know, eating disorders and anxiety.
Is that something you have had personal experience with?
Oh, 100%.
With all those things.
And I'm open about everything to my audience because I feel that everybody on social media is so perfect. And I just wanted to be that voice that was more just real.
Do you not have to work anymore because you made so much money?
Well, I've always been frugal, and I always saved my money, and I figured that if I just do what's right and help people, then there will be plenty of people who want to help me. And I took a leap of faith, and it was very scary leaving my business because I'm not like super rich, but I was able to save, and it's been a blessing. But I just know deep in my heart that I'll be okay as long as I'm helping people, and money, you know, it's gonna find me.
Well, it's a great story, Charlie. Thank you for coming in here and sharing it on KMOX. Best way to access the story and the content, I think, would be Instagram. You can 100%. See the entire video. It's a series of videos that you can watch at Charlie. That would be easy to find. And then we're going to ride bikes together. All right.
I can't wait.
You better get that route through Missouri.
I am. I promise I will.
I'll do as much as I can with you. I'm not going to do like an Ironman with you, but I'll ride the bike with you for sure. I'll get a bunch of other folks for support too. Charlie Jabbly, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Awesome story.
The stylus must have been delayed there on my turntable. I apologize. Hey, let's go down to spring training right now as pitchers and catchers, many of them reported before today. Chris Raby keeping track of everything. How are you, Mr. Raby?
Doing great. How are you guys?
Fantastic. I think everyone is very excited. I have sensed more anticipation for baseball season, maybe just because of the lack of the postseason play the past couple of years. And, you know, for a while we were spoiled and playing into October, and the end of the season, the beginning of the season has a little bit more time added to it because of the lack of playoff participation. But I think there's a lot of excitement about this season.
Yeah, and I think a lot of anticipation as well, Mark, around baseball just because of the fact that not that much has happened, right? Like, the Cardinals were so involved in the Giancarlo Stanton sweepstakes, and I think that a lot of people, especially in the industry, expected that when that domino fell, it would send everything into action. And we saw the deal made with the Yankees and the introductory press conference the first day of the winter meetings down in Orlando. The Cardinals, the next couple of days, made the mega deal for Marcell Ozuna. Saw a couple of closers moved and signing with teams. We saw the Cardinals make a couple of moves, including the trade of Stephen Piscotty. But then, you know, for about a month until after the winter meetings, after the introductions of Luke Gregerson and Miles Michaelis, nothing really happened, and still a lot hasn't happened. Yu Darvish was introduced today with the Cubs after signing his 6-year deal, but there's still a lot out there.
Yeah, I mentioned the excitement and anticipation. People are excited about getting baseball started again, but the fans are growing a little restless, right? The Cardinals fans, and of course, what happened this weekend played into that frustration. You got Yu Darvish, one of the best pitchers that was on the market, going to the Cubs, and then the Cardinals pick up Bud Norris, which... Not exactly the even match that you would want, and that's unfair to even make the comparison, but you get why people are frustrated.
Yeah, I think that people thought at the end of the year, and listen, the Cardinals said that they were going to shake things up, and I think that you hoped that the closer situation was going to be dealt with in terms of maybe bringing in a big-name guy who has had big save totals over the last few years. I think that... you know, you wonder why there wasn't more traction with Lance Lynn or why the Cardinals maybe haven't been attached to some of the bigger name pitchers. But again, it's apples and oranges. And I know that you just used the qualifier, but I saw a national writer yesterday in a story say that the Cardinals' answer to Yu Darvish was signing Bud Norris. Well, that's, I think, foolish.
Yeah, and that wasn't the answer.
I don't think you can assume that after the Cubs signed Yu Darvish, the Cardinals said, oh, man, what do we do? And ended up at Bud Norris.
Right.
You know, they're moves independent of each other. And, you know, I think there are reasons why maybe Lance Lynn hasn't been re-signed or there haven't apparently been talks. Same for Jake Arrieta. And a lot of that has to do with the guys that the Cardinals have here and the guys that we will see throwing for them, not only through spring, but also into the regular season. A lot of the young talent, a couple of the new additions. And I think you're right. People are eager to get this thing going and eager to hopefully begin a season and snap that 2-year drought of the postseason. And I'll tell you what, it's not just fans. There's a lot of pressure on a lot of people within this organization. And I truly believe that if you do not make a run and make the postseason, we could see some significant changes, and not just in terms of the players. So, you know, I think that all of that kind of leads us to an offseason that, and a spring training that certainly has its fair share of questions and its fair share of excitement. And I guess luckily for everyone, things keep getting started earlier and earlier, and we'll have some full squad workouts here in a couple of days, a week from Friday, our first spring training game. And then, you know, in 6 weeks before we even turn the calendar to April, we'll be opening the season in New York.
I cannot believe that the first game is a week from Friday, first of all, and it'll happen during my show, at least partially. You know, the spring training games, they go pretty fast, though. But do you think that there are still names that the Cardinals are targeting? I mean, I don't know how much interest there is in Jake Arrieta. I know that we, you know, in passing, you might have been in the room, we were talking about this, and the one way to maybe take the sting out of Hugh Darvish going to the Cubs is to sign Jake Arrieta. I don't know if that's the best move for the team, if it's something they're considering. I'd still like to see Mike Moustakas maybe land on the Cardinals, even if it is for just a year deal, because you need another bat. But it's hard for me to believe, and maybe I'm just naive here, that this is where we're going to land with all the signings come opening day.
I'll tell you this. There are needs. I think that there is a need in the bullpen, especially for someone to close out games. That is a need because of the way you struggled with that last year. Could it be Luke Gregerson? Maybe. I don't think he'll be the long-term answer as a closer. Could it be Alex Reyes in May? Perhaps. But there is a need. There is a need, perhaps, at third base, whether it's a combination of Matt Carpenter and Jed Jerko. If you're moving some guys around, if you're bringing somebody else in, there is a need. There is a need for innings in the starting rotation. However, with all of that said, I do not expect the Cardinals to all of a sudden begin to act in a reactionary manner. They have a very prudent and
very
disciplined manner of filling these voids. And take the names out of it, whether it's Jake Arrieta, Lance Lynn, Yu Darvish, whoever. Take the names out of it. What I don't think they are going to do is to commit long-term years and dollars to a starting pitcher right now because of who they have coming up. Think about it. You've got Carlos Martinez. You've got what you hope is a healthy Michael Wacha. And even taking Adam Wainwright out of it, you have Luke Weaver. You have Miles Michaelis, who you just signed. Jack Flaherty. Alex Reyes. Maybe not for a full year this year, but certainly past that. Why would you give big dollars or a 5 or 6 year contract to a guy when you believe in the crop of pitching that's coming up, not just for this year, but for years ahead?
It doesn't mean that they're
And it doesn't mean that you're looking past this year. They still hope to win the division and win the World Series. But I just don't all of a sudden see them changing the way they do business. Now, does that mean that at some point, whether it's the rest of this spring or during the regular season or at the trade deadline, you have built such a deep farm system? Does that mean that you won't go out and move assets to acquire a player? No, I think this year more than any, the window that you have over the next 2 years, I think you are poised to maybe make that big move. But again, I think it will come in the mold of the player the Cardinals value, a guy who's under control for a couple of years, a guy who will not necessarily just be a rental. So again, are they done? Is this the team we're going to see all year? No, you don't start the season on February the 13th, but do they have ammunition and are they poised to add as they see fit? Absolutely. And I know that that can be a frustrating thing for fans to hear, and I get flummoxed when I hear people call them cheap, especially because they were trying desperately to acquire one of the largest contracts in the history of professional sports. And it just takes patience. And I know that sucks sometimes, especially when we're waiting for things to talk about and when we're waiting for the season to start. But they certainly are positioned, I think, to be in a really, really good spot this year.
You know, how much do we, and I don't think Cardinals fans do this very much because they're so dialed in to the particulars of the team, both off field and on the field. But I think sometimes we underestimate the influence that the coaching staff does have. And you got Mike Maddux coming in, one of the best pitching coaches in all of baseball. I don't think there's any denying that. And also with Jose Kendo being back on the bench and in, you know, coaching, I think that's really, really important. And I think we've certainly have missed Okendo, but Mike Maddux in particular, you know, it's been said he's worked with Max Scherzer. I remember him when he was up in Milwaukee when I was there and did a great job. He's had an incredible string of success with pitchers, and he's working with a crop of pitchers here that he's got a lot of opportunity with, doesn't he?
Yeah, I'm really excited to see how he impacts this staff, Mark, especially some of the young guys that are coming up. And it's not to take anything away from Derek Lilliquist. He landed in Washington, so a swap for the Cardinals and Nationals. But, you know, sometimes new voices help, and his track record speaks for itself. As you said, one of the most respected pitching coaches in the game, Brian Eversgird, who's done an incredible job at every step in the minors, is going to be the bullpen coach. You mentioned Jose. Mike Schilt goes to the bench. And then you had Willie McGee, who has worked with just about everyone.
Oh, yeah. How can I forget Willie? Come on.
Yeah. Who's worked with just about everyone on this Cardinals team at some point during the minor leagues. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing what the coaching staff adds. And, you know, the last couple of years, let's be blunt about it. This team has struggled with a lot of aspects of the game that we're not used to seeing them struggle with. And some people said it was maybe a direct correlation to Jose Oquendo leaving and not being a part of the staff anymore when it comes to defense and base running and even some of the coaching at third base, although I think Mike Schilt did a really nice job. So that's a big part of this. You know, it brings a comfort level. Jose brings another level of, you know, maybe a guy who's a confidant for a lot of the players, especially some of the Latin players who he's worked closely with down here in Florida as they've been coming up. And, you know, I'm really excited to see how that plays out. I know Mike Matheny is fired up about it and is invigorated by it. And I know the clubhouse is excited about it. So, yeah, that's certainly a wrinkle that you cannot ignore. And, you know, as pitchers and catchers take to the field tomorrow for their first official workouts, we'll get to start to see Mike Maddux in action. And I think that'll be a lot of fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun hearing from you down there. I hope you get sunburned first and foremost, but we'll foremost.
Well, you know
rather.
What, Mark? I have spent so much time over the last month or so in Florida and in Phoenix that I already have a nice base layer, so I'm not going to get sunburned. And
he's not even joking.
I'm not
That's
even joking.
True.
You know, Sam Masterson, we're going to do our best as he just got down here to coat him in a layer of sunscreen. But Kyle McClellan has been here for the last 3 or 4 weeks. Mike Claiborne has basically lives down here half the year, so he's here. And you know, we're just really excited. We're going to do a lot of stuff. You know, with Kyle and Sam and Klaibs on the KMOX Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. So I urge everyone to follow along. And beginning tomorrow morning, it's going to be coming fast. So looking forward to joining you guys every day and bringing folks great coverage from down
here. I'll talk to you at 4:15.
All right, buddy.
Thank you, Chris. Chris Raby down spring training in Jupiter, Florida. Reports start this afternoon. We'll continue until the regular season and, of course, beyond at your home of the Cardinals. KMOX, here's what...
Now, the audio cut of the day.
And it's sponsored by my friends at the Good Feet Store. Good Feet Arch Support's immediately available, coming for your free test walk today. The narrative of the day from Capitol Hill is questions about a timeline concerning the story of Rob Porter and his background. Christopher Wray, the FBI director, testifying today about the background check that the FBI did of Rob Porter and when they delivered some of that information to the White House last year.
The FBI submitted a partial report on the investigation in question in March, and then a completed background investigation in late July. That is, soon thereafter, we received requests for follow-up inquiry, and we did the follow-up and provided that information in November, and then we administratively closed the file in January. And then earlier this month, we received some additional information, and we passed that on as well.
Okay, it might seem like mumbo-jumbo, but let me walk you through this. That was testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee. The deal is here is that the timeline is at odds with the explanation from the White House, who never mentioned any contact by the FBI as early as last March. Of course, Sarah Sanders asked about that today.
Look, we explained the process extensively last week. The White House Personnel Security Office, staffed by career officials, received information last year and what they considered to be the final background investigation report in November, but they had not made a final recommendation for adjudication to the White House because the process was still ongoing when Rob Porter resigned. In the view of Personnel Security Office, the FBI's July report required significant additional investigatory fieldwork before Personnel Security Office could begin to evaluate the information for adjudication. As Director Wray said, information was still coming to the White House Personnel Security Office in February.
We'll have more on that during Total Information PM, which is coming up next on KMOX.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.